Okay, we're rolling. So, who are you guys?
Well, I'm Chuck Thacker. I'm a technical fellow here at Microsoft. This is John Davis, my colleague who worked with me on this project.
Okay, and what is this project? What are you showing us today?
The project is called B3, and this is a machine, a piece of hardware, whose purpose in life is to actually explore new architectures, new computer architectures. Because Microsoft has basically recently gotten interested in doing architectural research, as we find that processors are no longer going to get faster. But there will be more of them, and so this is a vehicle for learning more about that.
So this is specifically hardware architecture. What are the ways that we can optimize architecture, or is this...
Okay. That's exactly right. If you look at what's going on in the computer architecture research community, and has been going on over the last 15 or 20 years, it's actually become very incremental. And the reason for that is that it's been very hard for researchers in universities to actually build chips to experiment with new ideas. This is a way to allow you to not go as far as building a chip, but still build something that actually will run real programs fast enough so that they're interesting.
So how does it all work? I mean, is this a virtual architecture, or are you actually changing bits and bytes?
You're actually changing bits and bytes. I mean, you have the ability to basically write a program to specify that new architecture that you want to simulate, emulate, or prototype, and then load that into the FPGA. And the FPGA is kind of like Silly Putty. It allows you to form things that are digital circuits and then actually have them work in a reconfigurable architecture.
But you're operating at the level of logic gates and memory cells.
Oh, really?
Rather than processors and memories, if you
will. Wow. So are you like actually printing your own, like using a 3D cell printer for printing?
No. The FPGA chip has two sections.
Yeah.
There's a control substrate, and then there's the actual logic.
Okay.
And the control substrate reaches up into the logic and sets up what it does. Essentially, each of these little cells is really just a logical function that can take six inputs and produce an output based on any variable function of those six inputs.
Sure.
So it's a lookup table.
Right.
But you can do all kinds of logic with that. And in particular, you can synthesize larger structures that emulate registers, and now you're beginning to build up the kinds of things that people would do on real chips, except it's all being done under the table, if you will, by this control infrastructure.
Excellent.
The controlling infrastructure for one of the chips of the four in that thing holds about 4 million bits.
Really? Okay.
So there's a lot going on. And it's
programmed. Let's take a look.
Yeah, let's take a look.
Okay. So what are we looking at right now?
So these are the field programmable gate arrays with their heat sinks. Power supply and fans. These things are electronic, they get hot. This is a piece of test equipment, if you will, to load the data stream into the chips and start them up. And each chip has got a couple of memory units, actually four, in two different channels, one on this side and one on that side.
Mm.
And it has a lot of input-output to the rest of the world. These connectors are 10 gigabit per second high-speed links.
Mm-hmm.
There are 4 gigabit Ethernets. There's a control board here that allows you to operate the board standalone if you want to,
mm-hmm.
or you can operate it from a program it from a remote computer via this cable, and that's what we're doing here.
So what do we have on the screen here?
So this is actually, John?
So what we're doing here is this board allows you to have it as a device connected to a host server or machine. So what we have running over PCI Express is sending bytes from the host computer to the B3 module, and this is telling us how many bytes have been transferred. So what we want to see is that all the bytes are transferred and there's no errors. So that just shows you that we can use this device as an accelerator or some other component in addition onto a server processor or other CPU.
And we see the communication going back and forth.
Exactly.
Sure.
So that's one of the main components of this device is the PCI Express that allows you to build bigger systems, bigger modules. And then, as Chuck mentioned, with the 10 gigabit Ethernet, now we can create 3D mesh structures and actually compose lots of these boards. So think of not just one of these systems, but 64 of these systems and several racks communicating together to create some type of very large-scale simulation and emulation environment.
Yeah, so what are some of the examples that you see academia research could be using for these?
Well, what we're doing is we're actually licensing this design to an external third-party company.
Okay.
Microsoft, of course, does not want to be a hardware company. Manufacturing hardware is not really very good for us, and certainly manufacturing hardware in low volumes that this will command makes no sense to us at all as a business.
Sure.
And so we're making the design freely available to the third party, who will build them for all comers,
okay,
including academics, including other industrial people, and including us ourselves.
Sure. Right?
And this is not charity. It's enlightened self-interest. We want the systems. We want to be able to use them for our own research. And if we get them, and we get what we want, and we seem to have done so, then there's no point in withholding them from the rest of the community.
Sure,
and
sure.
And we believe that it can make a large difference in the way research is done. So we're tied up with this thing called the RAMP Consortium, which is a group of five universities, top architecture universities. This was a consortium originally set up by Dave Patterson at Berkeley,
right?
And now includes Berkeley, Stanford, MIT, CNU, University of Texas, and UW. So a total of about 10 or 15 professors and perhaps 50 students working with this system and trying all kinds of things. I mean, there are a lot of different projects that are being done now. The reason this is called V3 is because it's actually a follow-on to some earlier machines that were built at Berkeley. But they have a lot of trouble in a university setting supporting a large number of users using a big system like this. So we went to them and said, you know, we'll help. And that's what we have done.
Excellent. So when is this going to be available? You mentioned it's already been licensed to a third-party manufacturer.
The board is actually undergoing a final tune-up for manufacturing. That will be finished on May 1st, and they will be shipping in early summer.
Interesting. And the software to run it, what's the...
The software, it comes in two forms. There is software to prepare the chips, that is to prepare the under the cover substrate that makes them do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's mostly standard software produced by Xilinx.
Okay.
Although there are quite a few third party vendors that are in this field, and we use some of their tools. But mostly they're Xilinx tools. And Xilinx also does not want to be in the software business. They're primarily a chip vendor. So they distribute these tools at relatively low cost to anybody. And they are the tools that know the details of the chip and can synthesize your logic, described as logic, down into what it takes to actually program the chips. Other software involved, well, there's, you know, things like software to load the chips and read the map. There's debuggers, little debuggers to talk to. But it's all fairly standard stuff, and it's the combination that is the power of the thing.
Sure, sure. Now, are you in terms of software? Are you all looking for other ways to think about different designs or share different designs or anything that would effectively help people have sort of patterns, if you will, for common processor tasks?
We call that basically common gateway, and much of it is shared.
Okay.
The community has already developed a lot of it. Much of what you see in this demo right now is software or gateway that was originally written for the V2 and imported for the V3 environment. Because they're not all that different. They're just better.
Okay.
Because of the progresses in the GPU technology. So we've written some. We've written a controller for the dynamic RAMs because we use a larger RAM than Xilinx was ever tried. And the controller has to be a little different.
How much RAM?
64 gigabytes in that system.
64 gigs. That's right. A lot. That's you could run several operating systems just in RAM.
That's, of course, the point. Right?
Right, right.
To run large applications, large simulations, those types of things. The overall power of the kind of collaboration we have with the RAM group is that they have these universities that will work together and make this gateway freely available to the entire community. So you can build on that, just take those building blocks and build bigger and bigger and better systems.
Sure,
that's
sure.
Very exciting.
Great. Excellent. Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.